Welcome to the Grace Story Podcast, where we introduce you to interesting people and their inspiring stories. From Grace professors, current students, and distinguished alumni, to special guests and speakers on our campus, you can meet new people and hear how they are impacting the world around them. This podcast is recorded and produced at Grace College and Seminary, located on the shores of Winona Lake in the great state of Indiana. This is the Grace Story Podcast. Today's guest on the podcast is Mr. Bill Yergin. Bill is a recognizable name in the world of leadership. He is known for creating unmatched company culture at Correct Craft, where he serves as the CEO and has taken Correct Craft to new heights over the last decade or so. Many subsidiaries that he has brought on to the Correct Craft platform. And somehow he has found time to write 6 books, travel to 110 countries, and deliver keynote addresses all over the country. Of course, near and dear to our hearts is the fact that his 2 daughters attended Grace and that he makes regular trips back to invest back into Grace. So, Bill, thanks for joining us.
Drew, it's my pleasure to be here. I love Grace College. Not only my 2 daughters, but my son-in-law also graduated from Grace. And so this is an important place for us, and I'm very happy to be here today.
We're so appreciative of your willingness to come back and share your expertise from the world of business, but also what you're going to do even with our students to talk about what it looks like to bring their faith into the workplace. So talk about even just a little bit of your growing up life and journey of faith and coming to know Christ. And then I'm interested to see how that then impacted the way you viewed business.
Sure. I grew up in a Christian family, had a wonderful mother and father and a brother, and just really the perfect family. Grew up in Christian school. And so I had a strong Christian foundation. But when I was in my 30s, my dad passed away. He had gotten Parkinson in his 40s and just had a really rough 15 years. And so when I was in my 30s and he passed away, I never lost my faith. But Drew, I couldn't really understand why such a good man that he'd been active in his church. I mean, this guy was a deacon, he'd help anybody, why he had to go through what he did and die early. So it really sent me on a search to really understand my faith as deep as I possibly could. So I started reading all kinds of books, you know, Evidence That Demands a Verdict, The Case for Christ, on and on. And really tried to solidify my belief. I read the Bible cover to cover probably 10 times. I've listened to it through 4 or 5 times. And I found that there's just so much evidence that we can hang our faith on. But at the end of the day, it's not intellectual evidence. It's still faith. And so I wrote a book I'm going to be talking about in chapel this morning, Faith Leap, where I talk about, you know, that idea of faith. It can be built on a strong foundation of evidence, but at the end of the day, you still have to have faith.
Mm-hmm. Where in that journey for you did leadership begin to play a part, which is, you know, you've written a number of books about leadership as well, obviously been an extremely successful CEO. When did sort of you recognize, I think I'm called to be a leader, and then I think I'm called to be a leader in the world of business?
So this is interesting. When I was in elementary school, I remember a couple of times on my report card, a teacher would write, "Bill has leadership potential," or something.
Usually that means you're a troublemaker, doesn't it?
I think it probably did. It probably did. I went to a Christian school, so there was a time that I thought about being a pastor. I eventually transitioned into business. And what I found was that as a Christian, business leaders have tremendous platforms to share their story and share their faith. And so, listen, I'm not knocking being a pastor at all, of course, but 90-some percent of churches are less than 100 people, and they're doing wonderful work. And again, I tremendously respect the pastors. But in the business community, people will listen to you that would never walk into a church. And people will read, I wrote a book, Faith Leap, about this. People will pick up that book because what's this CEO saying about this? That would never pick up a book that a pastor had written. So I'm not in any way saying that I'm better, that I'm in a better position than a pastor, but it does provide a platform,
yes,
to share my story that reaches people that might be unreachable otherwise.
You got into the boating industry. Tell us a little bit about how that started, and then I want to get into a bit of the culture piece. But tell us how you sort of your journey into the boating world.
So I went to college. Generally knew I wanted to study business, but I had a professor in my freshman year that convinced me I should study accounting, and so I got an accounting degree, became a CPA. And by the way, Grace has an amazing accounting program, as you know.
Yes.
Very highly respected accounting program. And got my CPA, went to work for the world's largest accounting firm, CPA firms, Coopers & Lybrand. Now it's PricewaterhouseCoopers. And a couple of years into it, just realized it wasn't for me. And it's a very important job. You know, we've got an amazing accounting team in our company, but it just wasn't for me personally. So went back, got my MBA, wanted to broaden my perspective a little bit, and went to work actually for one of my clients. One of my clients, when I was a CPA, was in the boating business. And being in South Florida, it just sort of made sense. And just one thing led to another. At one point, I'd actually stepped out of the boating industry for a couple of years, and then was hired back to the company that I had left. The owner, it was a turnaround. The company had sort of fallen apart. We were in the recession of the early 90s. There's just all kinds of issues. And I was hired back, was able to turn that company around with a great team, with help. And so I got invited to speak at a conference and tell the story. When I told the story, there was a magazine publisher in the room. The magazine publisher came up to me afterwards and said, "We want you to write a monthly column for a magazine." Well, I was like, "Well, I don't know how to do that. You know, what do I do?" And so he said, "No," I was like 30, 31 at the time. And he said, "I want you to write a monthly column." So I started writing this monthly column, Drew, and it sort of took off. And I started getting invited to speak all over the world at leadership conferences. And so literally I would travel all over the world. My daughters were homeschooled at the time. So I would take one of them with me, and we'd go to Europe or Australia or Asia or all over. And so it was a great opportunity to, you know, start to develop a lot of influence, you know, in the industry. And so that's sort of the path that I've been on.
I was really interested to listen and hear about how the writing part came into this. And I get, you know, you still write a monthly column.
Yeah.
So I get that monthly column. So I didn't know it was that many years ago that you started
about
that
30
journey.
Years ago. I mean, I've been published hundreds of times, you know, but the real interesting part of that is how it led to the speaking, because people would read the column. They'd say, "Hey, we want this guy to come speak."
Right.
And it just gave me an opportunity to develop influence, which I appreciated. Now, today, I'm the chair of the National Marine Manufacturers Association, which is the leading association in our industry, represents 36,000 companies in our industry. So it's just sort of grown on itself, and it's given me a platform that I can share my story, my values, my faith, and I appreciate that opportunity.
How do you manage just, and I want to get into the correct craft story here, but how do you manage being a CEO, which is more than a full-time job in and of itself, obviously involved in your community and church and family, and then also almost have this other thing, or I'm sure they're integrated, but this other thing of writing and speaking and traveling, talking about leadership and culture. Like, how do you do that?
A couple of ways. One is I've been blessed with tremendous energy, and I'm very, very thankful.
I was going to ask you if you sleep or not.
I sleep. But I've been blessed with tremendous energy, and I'm very, very, very thankful for that. Not only that, but my success has largely been based on having really amazing people around me. So I don't mind delegating. You know, it's my job to develop the vision where we're going. It's my job to create, you know, develop the values and make sure everybody's got a lot of clarity on that, and then let people do their job. And as long as people are doing their job, I'm happy to let them do that. And if you hire, you know, we talk a lot at CorrectCraft about having the right who's in place. It's who, not how.
Mm-hmm.
You never, when you're trying to solve a problem, you never think, how am I going to fix it? You always think, as a leader, who's going to fix it? And if you get the right who's in place, everything becomes easier, and your capacity just grows exponentially, because you're not worrying about whether somebody's doing their job or not.
Mm.
You've been clear on their vision. You've been clear on the values you want them to operate with, and you let them do it.
Mm.
And so that provides me the capacity, combined with a lot of energy, to do what I do.
Wow. Well, if you can bottle up the energy part, you know, that might be in the next book, you know, how to tell us the Correct Craft story, kind of how you got to Correct Craft. And then, I mean, it's really amazing what has happened under your leadership. So just tell us a little bit about what has happened and why.
Correct Craft was founded in 1925. We're about 6 weeks away from our 100th birthday. So we're very, very excited about that. And it was founded by a wonderful family who had great culture, great values. I wrote a book about it called Making Life Better that people are interested. They can pick up the book or reach out to me. I'll send you one for free. And if so it tells the story. The company, that's a wonderful story. But once they got about 80 years into it, things sort of started falling apart. The family ownership had gotten down to third and fourth generation. And, you know, it's very unusual in any organization to get down that deep. I mean, less than 1% of companies, you know, make it into the fourth generation or anywhere near 100 years. So there was just a lot. While there were good people, there were a lot of different perspectives on how the company should be run. So this family member was the CEO. The rest of the family got together and fired him. And then they decided they're going to bring an outside CEO, but everybody they brought in, it was just very, very challenging, and it was a challenging environment. So I was the fifth CEO in 5 years when I came on board. They had tried to hire me to be the fourth, and I walked away. I said, no, I just didn't feel like this is what I was supposed to do. And then when the guy they hired for the fourth, he lasted about a year, and they came back to me, really still wasn't interested. I actually wanted to be a consultant. That was my dream. I was going to start a consulting firm and run a consulting firm. And it was just a God thing. It was just a God thing. We don't have time for the stories, but I could give you two or three stories. You'd scratch your head and say, that really happened. And it was just a God thing. And so I felt like I'm supposed to go to Correct Craft. So I got there, and it was a mess. I mean, literally the night that I got there, the very first night, I was starting on Thursday morning. I went in on Wednesday night, and the chief financial officer said, I need to talk to you. And he said, I said, okay. And I walked over to his office. He said, it's a lot worse than they've told you.
Oh, boy.
I said, okay. That was literally my first hour on the job, my first 30 minutes on the job. And so it was a mess. And you know, it got – because of the – challenges with ownership, because five CEOs in 5 years. Oh, and the production guy, the guy who's run the production had just died of a heart attack. So they didn't, I mean, it was just, it was a mess. And so luckily, you know, we were able to turn it around, you know, with God's help. Culture was a big part of that. And, you know, driving in culture. And in 2009, we were a $40 million company. And last year we bumped up over $1 billion. So we've had incredible growth.
Amazing.
And culture was a really big part of that.
So you talked about culture being a big part of that. And sometimes culture is this sort of squishy thing that's can be hard for us to understand and define, and for a leader, at least for me, challenging to create and reinforce. Mm-hmm. But you've studied culture. You've written about culture. You're going to talk today at a luncheon about the economics of culture. Give us kind of the high level. What does culture mean to you? How is it instilled? What does it look like? Give us some pointers.
So let me tell you a quick story that I think will help emphasize this, and then I'll come back more directly to your question. When I came to Correct Craft, you know, as I said, we're in a mess. So just shortly into the job, I knew that we needed to do something to crystallize our culture and get our culture back on track. So I took 25 employees to Mexico, to Cali, Mexico, to build a house for a homeless family. Almost everybody thought it was a bad idea because, you know, we had so many issues to work on. The company, it's like, are you serious? You're going to take 25 employees for a week and go to Mexico and build a house for a homeless family? And the reason I did that was because I was telling our team, hey, we're going to fix this. We're going to build a platform. We're going to do a lot of good. But I was the fifth guy in 5 years, Drew. They had heard all kinds of stuff. They didn't know what they could believe from me. So we went to Cali, Mexico, spent a few days. It wasn't a week, but we spent a few days. We built a house for a homeless family, 110 degrees, working 110 degree heat every day, sleeping on the desert floor, very challenging circumstances. At the end of that trip, the people that went, we were in San Diego getting ready to come back, and they said things like, That was the best few days of my life. I've never done something so impactful. I can't wait to do something like this again. Very difficult circumstances. So they went back to our team, told them, hey, this guy's saying this is for real. We're going to do some good things. Since then, I've taken employees to Cambodia, India, Ethiopia, all across Africa, Central America. Yeah, we've done dozens of trips, and we do a lot of stuff in the States for our local communities. That was the turning point. That was the turning point for CareerCraft, because now people knew, okay, we're going to do something big. We're going to fix this mess we're in, but we're going to do something big. So how do you develop a culture? It really is four sort of, I say easy steps. They create a lot of clarity because this creates a lot of confusion. Mm-hmm. People don't know how do I develop culture. So I didn't say, number one, be really clear on your values. And people say, oh, I'm clear on my values. But a lot of it's just sort of swirling around in their head. Yeah, we don't cheat. We don't steal. But just be really, really clear on your values. So identify your values. Number two, find a great way to communicate those values. If you go on our website, you'll see our what we call our identity pyramid or our value pyramid. And we've created a tool to be able to communicate those values to our team. The third step is, as a leader, you have to keep reinforcing, talking about those values over and over and over again till you're tired of talking about it and people are tired of hearing it. But, you know, we have 50 entities within CareerCraft, and we have facilities all across the U.S. Every time I visit one of our facilities, they're going to hear me talk about culture. They're going to hear me talk about values. And so I know someone will say, we've heard this before, but that's okay because you've got to keep reinforcing. And then the fourth step is you have to model it, because people will always pay more attention to what you do than what you say. And so you have to model those values. And if you do those four things, I write about them in one or two of the books, but you do those four things, you're going to have a great culture.
That's amazing. And, you know, there's the dollars and cents impact, right? 40 million to over a billion. That's impressive in and of itself. But I know for you, it's the impact on people that's much more important than the dollars and cents of it.
So there's a couple of things related to that. One is culture does drive results. As you said, I'm going to be talking about that at lunch. But culture only drives results if it's authentic. If somebody listens to this podcast or goes to our lunch today and they think, I got the secret. I'm gonna create culture because I can improve my results. It doesn't work because people see through the inauthenticity. So you've got to be authentic, you know, with your results. But if you are, it does drive, you know, great results, because people want to be part of something bigger than themselves. Mm-hmm. They want to be part of an organization that's doing good things, and so that driving great culture drives great results in an organization.
As we sort of wrap up, one last question, and then we'll point people towards some of your resources. You're speaking at a luncheon, you're talking to some business leaders, and I know that's important to you because I think influence is something you want to utilize well, but you're also talking to college students and the next generation, and you've got young workers in your environment at CareerCraft. What are you instilling? What are your hopes for? What are you trying to invest in the next generations?
I would say two things. First of all, I speak to college students and young people a fair bit, and I want to encourage them to be a learner. And be a learner not in the sense of consuming information. That's part of the process. But the way more important part of the process is take in information to actually grow and be okay with having your mind changed. Drew, most people are knowers. I don't say that in a judgmental sense. I don't know anybody's heart, but most people are knowers. And what that means is they may read books, they may consume information, but they consume information to validate what they already think. And so if you're a knower, you're taking in all kinds of information, but you're not really growing because you're twisting it through your mental paradigms to validate what you already believe.
Yeah.
If you're a learner, you actually get a bit of an endorphin rush if your mind's changed, because it's like, wow, I learned something. This is great. So I encourage college students, you know, be a learner. The other thing that I encourage college students to is to choose impact. And we have things in our office that says impact is greater than rewards. And when people, I gave a graduation speech, thousands of people in South Florida about a year and a half ago. And I told the students, I said, many of you have come to college, and this was actually graduate students. I said, many of you have come to college and gotten your graduate degrees for a career because you want to make money, you want to have rewards. There's nothing matter with that by itself, but as a mindset, it's a bad mindset. And the reason is that if you're chasing rewards, you get on what's called the hedonic treadmill. And you're just, all you're doing is exhausting yourself, you're burning through relationships, and you're ending up, you know, at the end of your life unsatisfied. And you've gotten some of the rewards, but they're not fulfilling. But if you chase impact, in other words, you're going to make the world better, you're going to make your team better, you're going to make your community better, it's incredibly rewarding. It's incredibly fulfilling, I should say. But get this, this is the cool part. If you chase impact, many times you still get the rewards that the rewards-driven people are chasing. And the reason is, in organizations, people want impact-driven folks on their team. And that people want to do business with people who are focused on impact, not just rewards. So be a learner, chase impact. You get those two things right, you're going to have a big leg up on everyone else around you.
That's really good. And it's like that deeper level. If you learn in order to grow, you're going to know a bunch.
Yeah.
If you make an impact to influence people, there's going to be a lot of rewards.
Yes.
Rewards here on earth, but you know, ultimately
intrinsic,
it's about
the
ultimately it's about the eternal reward of bringing glory to Christ. And so,
but choosing that impact, it's very fulfilling. There's a lot of intrinsic rewards.
Yeah.
My experience has been when you choose impact, you get the other stuff too, mm-hmm. just because you know people want to deal with you.
Yeah. That's awesome. Well, if people want to learn to grow more through your resources, through the things you're doing, what are the best ways for them to find your books, find you, learn more about you, learn more about Correct Craft?
Thank you. CorrectCraft.com. That has a lot of information about our company, has a lot of information about our culture. So I'd encourage people to go to CorrectCraft.com. If you want to get in touch with me personally, LinkedIn is really the best place to do that. Bill Juergen, I'm not hard to find, and I love you know, getting meet people electronically as well as impersonally. The books are on Amazon. There's 6 books, and if it's a financial thing, send me a note and I will send you a book. It's not a money making.
You brought a lot of them today to give away, so we thank you for that.
It's not a money making venture. We want to have impact, and so you can buy the book on Amazon. If you can't afford it, let us know. We'll send you one. So.
Well, thank you for the books that you're giving out today. Thank you for the boat that you have ensured we have at Grace so we can have a successful and a great experience for our bass fishing team here at Grace. So thank you for that. But thank you most of all for your time and your wisdom and your willingness to invest in our students and in our community.
It's totally my pleasure, Drew. Thank you for having me.
And thanks to everyone for listening today to the Grace Story podcast. Thanks to the marketing team for their work in producing this podcast. If you could do us a favor and like, comment, subscribe, share this with others that you think would find this inspiring, please do so. And if you have any questions or comments or need us to make a connection, feel free to reach out to us at podcast@grace.edu. Until next time, live your best Grace Story today.